Trial by Firing Squad. This story is an experience of William Clifford Cleveland, who was the father of Elder E.E. Cleveland, who was for many years an associate director in the ministerial department of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists in Washington, D.C. He tells his story. I stood in the gravel pit by the pump house, shovel in hand, words of refusal still bitter on my lips. The sergeant's voice shook with anger. Either you shovel that pile of gravel or my firing squad shoots. He shook his fist in my face. We teach soldiers to obey orders 7 days a week in this army if it's the last thing we do to them. The knots in my stomach tightened. The officer whirled and marched straight for his rifleman. My mind clawed for some clue that this wasn't the end. Was he bluffing? The crescents his heels chopped in the hot summer dirt didn't leave much room for that. Huge muscles bulged on his neck. He barked an order. Then whirled again, his arm flew up and a pudgy finger pointed straight at my face. My fingers tightened around the shovel. Eyes clamped shut, ears tensed for him to say the last words I would ever hear. I waited. Heavy footsteps pounded back my way. I forced my eyes open, then wished I hadn't. Shoot, white man, shoot, my mind screamed. He moved in eyeball to eyeball. Beads of sweat on his forehead dripped onto mine. I felt his heart pound. His tobacco-stained breath blasted the order through my nose. Soldier, move that shovel! Then he backed off and glared. Confusion fogged me in as my brain whirled. God, I breathed. And then I knew what to do. For a few seconds I looked at him, then I held the shovel out to him. Shoot me if you wish, I told him, but I cannot do what you ask. His jaw dropped. Disbelief broke through the rage on his face. Fire shot from his eyes as they met mine for a second. Turning to his men, he sent them on their way with a wave of his hand, then glared back at me again. Soldier, he bellowed. The CO wants to see you at 1600 hours at headquarters. Now get to your barracks. After what seemed an endless walk past taunts and jeers of Holy Day Boy and Advent Sabbath Keeper, I finally reached the barracks. I sat down on my bunk, relieved to be alone in the empty room. God, I cried, where are you? You worked everything out so perfectly last week. How did this happen? To the Adventist evangelist who baptized me that Sabbath morning, late in 1916, the World War was mainly a sign of the end. Few Americans felt personally involved. Hadn't our president promised to keep us out of the war? Then suddenly we were fighting in it. Wondering just how my new faith would fit in with Uncle Sam's army, I obeyed my summons to serve. But God was on my side. Without speaking to a single officer about my Sabbath, I simply prayed and hoped, and God had honored my trust. Early that first Sabbath morning, an officer called us all out to the parade grounds for a surprise inspection. One bold exception stood out among the wrinkled batch of GIs that straggled out and lined up, me. One thing you guys had better learn in this army and fast, the officer barked, and that is that you are always ready for inspection. Out of this whole lousy bunch, only one man is ready. Congratulations, Cleveland. You may take the day off. There's a pass waiting for you at headquarters. The rest of you punks, report for work at 900 hours. The poor officer was quite unawares that I had prepared for church, not for his inspection. Man, what a God! With him on my side, army life would be a snap. And now this. Sitting up on my bunk, I tried to think through the morning events. I searched for an answer, but like a whirlpool, my dazed brain sucked every snatch of hope out of reach. When I turned to lie down again, my face brushed against something. I pushed it aside and then realized that I held my Bible. Sitting up, I turned to the story of Daniel in the lion's den. With new courage, I leafed back to Psalms. There I found my answer. Call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver thee, and thou shalt glorify me. Sinking to my knees, I claimed God's promise in Psalms 50:15. A moment later, I heard loud, explosive talk coming my way. I tensed to jump to my feet when a voice spoke up. That'll teach him to spruce up for his Sabbath and put us to work all day while he goes out and has a lark. Time we get through with his sand bath, he won't be sittin', standin', or lyin' for a week. With the Bible open on the bed in front of me, I stayed on my knees. Feet hit the front steps, and the door flew open. In walked about half a dozen of my buddies. I knew they could hardly wait to get their hands on me. The room became deathly silent. For a moment, not a man moved. Then I heard whispers and the sound of feet tiptoeing from the barracks. God was still on my side. He had spared me a rubdown with sand by men who were so angry that they would have left my body one solid abrasion. After a prayer of thanksgiving, I sat down again and searched my Bible for texts to memorize in preparation for my interview with the commanding officer. A few hours later, Bible in hand, I went to the headquarters building. A private pecked at a typewriter on a desk in the middle of the room. He stopped long enough to hear my name and motioned me to a chair on my right. I sat down beside what I concluded must be the door to the commander's office. As I sat there, the starkness of the place, bare except for the necessities, depressed me. A lone bulb dangled from a long twist of black wire that ran up one corner of the room and out to the center of the ceiling. Dusty racks of military and World War propaganda guarded either side of the door I had just entered. Across the room, skewed at an irritating angle, hung a picture of President Woodrow Wilson. Under the windows along the back wall stood a couple of old desks and an antique filing cabinet. A clock between the windows announced the time, 3:45. I had purposely arrived early. Settling back to wait, I felt new peace wash over me. The fog, the confusion of the morning, vanished. For several minutes I sat there, eyes shut, praying. Then the commanding officer's door flew open and out burst two distraught junior officers. I jerked my feet in as they rushed past. The commander, General Andrew Stanfield, strode out the door after them. "Where's Cleveland?" he demanded. "Isn't it enough he disobeyed orders this morning without being late to see me? Get him here!" Scarcely glancing up, the private at the typewriter nodded in my direction. "He's right over there, sir." General Stanfield turned and glared at me. "Black boy," he said, "don't you know that 1600 hours means 4 o'clock? Look at that clock, and the next time be here 3 minutes early." The clock said 3:57. "Yes, sir," I mumbled. The commander closed the door and walked back to his large mahogany desk. On the wall above him hung a picture of the president flanked by two flags. He motioned to a chair in front of the desk. "Sit there." He paused. I waited. After shifting in his chair, he growled, "Cleveland, they tell me you disobeyed orders this morning and talked back at an officer. What do you have to say for yourself?" Leaning back in his large swivel chair, he eyed me through a haze of cigar smoke. I pulled in my stomach. The sergeant told me to shovel gravel on the Sabbath, sir. Wondering which showed through most, my waning courage or my jitters, I added, but I wasn't aware of talking back at him. I'm sorry if I did. General Stanfield leaned forward. His eyes glared into mine. In this army, Cleveland, any time you refuse to obey an order, you're talking back. And as for that Sabbath of yours, this is the army, not church. We don't know what the Sabbath is, and what's more, we aren't interested in finding out. He paused, reached for a pen and paper, and began to write. After a couple of lines, he looked up. Now, young man, he continued, his voice barely softer, I'm not going to do anything about this morning's incident. But next Saturday morning you'd better do what you're told, or you'll be in for real trouble. Is that clear? God, what do I say now? I breathed. The story of the three Hebrews before the enraged Nebuchadnezzar flashed across my mind. I looked up. Sir, I understand what you said and why you said it, but I cannot work on God's Sabbath. It begins at sundown on Friday and ends at sundown on Saturday. I'll be glad to do double duty any other time, but it will be impossible for me to work on the Sabbath. The officer half rose from his chair, eyes flashing through slits and his face reddening, jaw set. He leaned towards me. His fist slammed the table. Soldier, he bellowed. What kind of army do you think this would be if every man in it told us what he was and wasn't going to do and when he planned to do it? Next Friday night or Saturday morning, you'll do what you're told. He shook his head violently. Sir, it's not that I won't. I can't. My Bible teaches me that God's law is above every human law and that the Sabbath is one of his laws. I must obey God. General Stanfield settled back into his chair. Private Cleveland, he said tersely, you are under military arrest. Report to this office for court-martial in 3 days at the same time. Till then, stay in your barracks. That is all. Rising, he motioned towards the door. I stood to leave. He reached for the knob only to turn and face me again. Your meals will be brought to you. Then he glanced at my Bible. And bring along that book with your laws in it when you come back here, he commanded with icy scorn. 3 days later, I again sat in General Stanfield's waiting room. Again, I listened to the private, a different one this time, peck at the typewriter. Again, I closed my eyes to the glare of the light bulb suspended overhead. Pictures of the past couple of weeks drifted back and forth through my imagination. I thought of God's answer to my prayer that first Sabbath morning, how he gave me the day off without my even having to ask for it. I remembered the sergeant's terrifying bluff before a firing squad the next Sabbath, and of how he rescued me from a torturous sand bath a few minutes later. I thought of the tense interview with General Stanfield that afternoon, and of the past 3 days I had spent in Bible study and prayer, preparing for the afternoon court-martial. Eventually I realized that perhaps God was answering my prayer for freedom to keep his Sabbath holy, but in a different way. After all, I was still alive. The authorities had not sent me to the guardhouse. They had trusted me to stay in my own quarters and to appear on time for the trial without sending a military policeman to escort me. Lord, I don't know what they'll do to me in there. I trust you to give me the right words so that this trial can be a witness for your truth. Help me. Heavy footsteps interrupted my prayer. The sounds of joking and laughing came from just outside the front door. Seconds later, the door burst open and levity stopped. 3 officers, severity on their faces, stepped to the private's desk. The private jumped to attention and saluted. "We're here to see General Stanfield for a court-martial," a heavy-set captain announced. "The general said he would see you as soon as you arrive, sir." The private stepped to the door and knocked. After a pause, he entered. When he emerged, he addressed the captain again. "General Stanfield says he'll be with you in just a minute, sir." "I hope he won't be too long," clipped a nervous second lieutenant. "I haven't got all day." "You may be seated if you wish, sir," the private told him. "He's just signing a few documents." The lieutenant took the chair next to mine and then edged away from me. I felt like poison. The others stood blowing smoke about the room. The front door swung open again, and another lieutenant hurried in. Shorter and stouter than the one beside me, he puffed and wiped his face with his handkerchief. "What's this all about, anyway?" he demanded. "They called me at the last minute, and I'm stacked to the gills with reports to get to Washington by Monday. I suppose this will make me one more." He shot a scornful glance my way. "Ah, some recruit thinks he's going to baptize the U.S. Army into his church," spat a non-commissioned officer. His statement jarred me out of what little composure I had left. I hadn't noticed that one of the officers in the room was the sergeant I'd met at the gravel pile 3 days before. He flipped a cigarette into an ashtray. Just then, General Stanfield appeared at the door. The lieutenant next to me snapped to his feet. The others joined him in a smart salute. The commander brushed his hand to his forehead and motioned towards the door. "We'll call for you when we're ready, Cleveland," General Stanfield said. He turned and closed the door behind him. I waited for what seemed an eternity. When the door opened again, the sergeant ordered, "Private Cleveland, General Stanfield wants to see you in here." Picking up my Bible, I went past the waiting sergeant into the room and saluted. Behind the desks sat the 5 white officers who would hear my case. "You will be seated, Private Cleveland," General Stanfield waved towards the chair I had occupied 3 days earlier. I felt like the proverbial sheep among wolves. The general cleared his throat. "Private Cleveland, this is Captain Smith and Lieutenant Carter on my left, and Lieutenant Hurst and Sergeant Spears on my right." I exchanged glances with the officers. "We understand," Stanfield continued, "that at about 900 hours last Saturday morning, you refused to obey Sergeant Spears' order to work at the gravel pile by the pump house. Give an account of yourself." "I'm happy to obey any order I'm given by an officer you feel like obeying, black boy," shot back the sergeant. "You sure felt like obeying me last Saturday morning, didn't you?" "Cleveland," Captain Smith joined in, "you either get that crazy religion out of your head, or you'll be serving this army a whole lot longer than you started out to." "Gentlemen," I replied, "my religion teaches me to obey my superiors, and that includes officers in the army. However, my religion also teaches me to..." "Listen, soldier," cut in Lieutenant Hurst. "I haven't got all day to listen to you preach about your crazy religion. You're making me have to fill out one more report to send to Washington, as if all I had to do was send in reports on screwballs like you. Will you do what you're told, when you are told, or won't you? That's all Washington wants to know, and that's all I care to waste the ink to tell them." "Cleveland, you may finish what you had to say," broke in General Stanfield. "We will listen." He leaned back in his chair and puffed on his cigar. "Thank you, sir," I replied. "As I said, I do not wish to disobey my superiors. But as a Christian, I believe one must obey God rather than human authority any time the two conflict. The Bible teaches that Saturday is the Sabbath, and it forbids any work on that day. That is why I could not do what Sergeant Spears ordered me to do last Saturday morning." "Soldier," the captain demanded, "what outfit taught you this nonsense anyway? Were your parents foolish enough to bring you up this way?" No, sir, I replied. I have believed this for less than a year. I am a Seventh-day Adventist.
A seven-day how many?
Lieutenant Carter interrupted. Seventh-day Adventist, General Stanfield volunteered. He picked up a card and leaned towards Lieutenant Carter. It's right here on his record. Go ahead, Cleveland, he said with a glance my way. He handed my card to the officer. I joined the Adventist Church of my own free will after hearing a series of Bible lectures in my hometown several months ago. Now I realize the problem I'm creating for you gentlemen, and I wish it didn't have to be this way, but I believe with all my heart that Saturday is the Sabbath, and I'm prepared to take the consequences, even if it means death. That's the ridiculous truth, muttered the sergeant under his breath. His beady eyes met mine, the same eyes I'd seen the previous Sabbath morning at the gravel pit. I really don't care where you got this notion or who put it into your head, spat Captain Smith, but I know who's going to get it out.
I wouldn't be so sure of that, sir, Spears growled.
You should have seen the idiot make a fool of himself last Saturday morning, excuse me, Private, Sabbath morning, he added in mock respect. There was a pause. Tension filled the room. My stomach convulsed. Your church teaches you to rebel against the government, exploded Lieutenant Carter. Rebellion, that's all it is, rebellion, pure and simple. He half stood and shook his fist at me. Maybe you will die before this is settled. His voice rose to a near scream. Die over some fool notion. Staring at my feet, I silently asked God what to do. At last I decided there wasn't anything I could do. So I sat there with my head bowed, my five white tormentors glaring at me. General Stanfield broke the silence. Gentlemen, he said, rising to his feet, I think Private Cleveland's position is quite clear to all of us. That is what I wanted you to hear. I will have to think this case through some more before I make a decision. I know you are all busy with other responsibilities, so you may be excused. The four rose to leave. The company commander stepped ahead to open the door and said, Lieutenant Carter, I'll make out the report to Washington on this incident myself.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir, the lieutenant replied.
The men left the room. I leaned forward to stand, but the general stopped me with a wave of his hand. The door closed again. General Stanfield returned to his chair behind the desk. Feeling his searching look fixed on me, I glanced at him out of the corner of my eye and wondered what he was thinking. His face appeared serious, but he didn't seem angry. For several minutes he sat, scarcely moving, just thinking. He rubbed his chin with his fingers. Presently he got up. Taking Sergeant Spears' chair, he brought it around the desk and set it down close to mine. Cleveland, he began. I noticed a touch of kindness in his voice. The Army isn't opposed to you fellows going to church on Sunday from time to time. You want it on Saturday, and that could be arranged, but you're different. You insist that it's got to be every Saturday, and not just services in the morning either, but the whole day, starting on Friday night. I told you to bring that book with you when you came to see me. Now I want you to show me from the Bible where it says that. With a prayer that the Lord would guide my mind, I began with the story of creation. Moving through to the experience of the children of Israel, I explained the fourth commandment and the sacredness of the day. I pointed out God's intention of blessing a specific day as seen in his threefold miracle of the manna for 40 years. In the New Testament, I pointed out the example of Christ and the apostles. The commander's interest seemed genuine. Finally, I concluded with the prophecy about Sabbath keeping in the new earth in the last chapter of Isaiah.
Young man, I can see that you know what you believe. I'd like to know what you people teach about war. With another prayer for help, I did the best I could to explain. When we finished with war, he wanted to know about the second coming of Christ, then about death, the resurrection, the judgment, the millennium, and hell. The kind of questions he asked gave me the distinct impression he knew more about Seventh-day Adventists than he cared to reveal, and that he was testing me to see what I knew. We sat for an hour covering nearly every phase of the church's belief. With each passing moment, his attitude became more favorable. Finally, he stood to his feet and put out his hand. "Cleveland," he said, "I congratulate you on knowing so well what you believe. For one so recently baptized into your faith, I am frankly amazed at the extent of your knowledge. I know about Seventh-day Adventists. They are good people. My family employs a Seventh-day Adventist maid, and she gives us honest, faithful service. Don't you worry about that report to Washington. It will be favorable, I can assure you. And don't worry about your Sabbath either. As long as you are under my command, the time is yours from sundown Friday till sundown Saturday." Relief flooded over me. I felt weak, but I managed to salute and say, "Yes, sir. Thank you, sir." The officer walked with me to the door and held it open. "Oh, one more thing." And when he touched my arm to stop me, I turned and looked at him, noticing a twinkle in his eye. "Mind you don't go teaching that religion of yours around here too much, or we won't have any army left."